Make sure we're in fellowship then and continue on. We're here wrapping up point D under major point six, the purpose, the order and purpose of the resurrection. And point four here, it is necessary for church age believers to receive their resurrection before those believers that lived in the age of Israel receive theirs. Hebrews 11:39 and 40, this verse is obscure to many, but pretty straightforward actually. And it deals with the fact that all Old Testament believers died in faith, not having received the promise. Whatever they were promised, and of course the promise was resurrection, or various other promises. For instance, Abraham had promises related to land, had promises related to descendants. Well, Abraham never lived to see any of that. There was promises made to David under the Davidic covenant. David didn't live to see all that. And so these believers all died in faith. And they gained approval through their faith. Why? Because faith is the coin of the realm. This is what God is interested in. If you stop and think about it very long, you recognize that faith is really the only way God can operate. Other than that, it has to be some kind of merit system. And if it's merit, oh, we're all in trouble. Because with the advent of the sin nature, spiritual death, you could never please God as an unbeliever. Just can't be done. But God devised a system whereby one act of faith in Jesus Christ, his work, his person and work on the cross, yields eternal life. And then, of course, we're continued to challenge to walk in faith, to not compromise with this current world system, the temporal life, but to continue to walk in faith and say, you know, God's going to provide. I don't have to crank anything up. God's going to take care of it. I don't have to worry about this. God will deal with it. And obviously there are things where we do have to intervene. We do have to worry, or we don't have to worry, but we do have to do things. It's not saying just we're completely passive at all times. But essentially, that God is in charge of all of this. And this is unfolding. That old deal, and I haven't read it in a long time, but the Desiderata, all things are unfolding as they should. In some cases, that's true. I mean, God allows volition to run its nasty, evil course. And most volition is just that, nasty and evil. But then he provides for those who are otherwise positive who want to know him, who want to plan, be a part of his plan. Well, they did not receive what was promised because God had provided something better for us. So that apart from us, they would not be made perfect, complete. In other words, they're not going to get their resurrection until we get ours. The church age has got, the church age believers, the last will become first. And that is one application off of that verse, that the last will become first. Abraham preexisted us by, 3,500 years or more. And he's going to get his resurrection after we get ours. So that's interesting that the church is exalted in this sense. And in fact, if one really had their choice, I would think, if you had a choice of what dispensation to live in, I'd like to live right where I live right now. I wouldn't want to change anything. Number one, I would want to be in the church age. Minimum of ritual. Can you imagine all them treks down to the temple under the age of Israel? All that stuff you had to do. All those mandated journeys to Jerusalem. The pilgrim feast that all the males had to make. All the ritual, all the sacrifice, all the things that are involved in all that. Well, I'm happy just to have a minimum. We've got two rituals, baptism and the Lord's table. That's it. And so therefore, once we comply with those, and the Lord's table's ongoing, baptism is a one-shot deal, obviously. But once that's it. And also prophetically, living here at the end of time, we have the best view of history that's ever been available if you're intellectually honest. And you want to know the truth. The prophetic scheme is well in place, as we can see. And I just marvel at many things I study and look at just how neatly this all fits together. I mean, it's almost like someone planned it. As if. Well, point E, at the end of Daniel's 70th week, all Old Testament believers will be resurrected at the second advent. The bodily appearance of Jesus Christ on planet Earth. Daniel 12, 2a, we saw that. This passage in Daniel is as clear as any in the Old Testament regarding the resurrection. Now, it doesn't provide every detail, doesn't have to. We also understand the nature of progressive revelation, that God provides information about such subjects as he goes, and that ultimately, when you put it all together, you have a full picture of things. Many of these who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. These to everlasting life are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the believers, during and previous to the age of Israel. The Gentiles fall into this category too, the family priesthood, that dispensation. Also, John 5:29a. And all those who are in the tombs will hear his voice and will come forth. Those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life. Those who committed the evil deeds. And again, when you read Daniel and John, you might think to yourself, okay, there's one massive resurrection for all people in which everybody's resurrected at the same time. The good are judged and rewarded. The bad are judged and punished. No, it doesn't happen that way. That's not the way it happens. It might sound that way on the surface. But then Revelation 20, 4 through 6, as we're going to see, Revelation makes a distinction between the resurrection of believers and the resurrection of unbelievers. Revelation 20, 4 through 6, and I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. As I understand it, my current understanding of this is these thrones represent the thrones of the 12 apostles, who were promised thrones to judge Israel during the millennium. And so, these are other thrones, I don't know of anybody else that's promised a throne at that point. I mean, the Lord is, but clearly this is not the Lord, because this is plural, thrones, not a throne. So, thrones imply royalty. This is a part of the royal priesthood for these believers, these 12. Paul, the 12th, and then the other 11 minus Judas. And judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those that had been beheaded because of their testimony of Jesus and because of the word of God, and those who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead and on their hand. And they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Now this encompasses, again, dispensationally, this encompasses the age of the Gentiles back here and the age of Israel. And then you have the parenthesis for the church age, which is not a part of this. And then you have the final 7 years of age of Israel, Daniel's 70th week. And so any believers here, here, or here are going to get their resurrection at the time of the second advent, just after. And the rest of the dead, as we're going to see, did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. It is the first resurrection in the sense that it is just that, a bodily resurrection limited to planet Earth. That it happens here. This all happens here. This is seen in the judgment of the sheep and the goats. It's seen in Matthew 24 and Mark 13 there about where he sends his angels out to gather the elect from the four winds of heaven. Why is he gathering them all? They're going to come to be resurrected right there on planet Earth. And blessed and holy is the one who has a part in the first resurrection. Over these the second death has no power. They will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. This includes all dead believers from the time of Adam until the day of Pentecost. Again, minus some people that were, we might say, grandfathered into the church age. People that were believers that became a part of the church. As well as those that will become believers and die during the final 7 years of human history, Daniel's 70th week. Two, some will become believers during Daniel's 70th week, manage to survive the horrendous judgments of that time, and enter the millennium in their earthly bodies. They will begin repopulating the planet. The resurrection, clearly, I mean, I don't think I should have to say this, but I will. The resurrection's for the dead. It's not for the living. If you're alive, you're okay. You don't need a resurrection. You're still alive. And so living believers will enter into the millennium. Matthew 25, This is the passage that, in fact, delineates the future of the sheep and the goats in broad strokes, but nevertheless, it gives us what's going to happen. Now, this is after Jesus has returned to the planet bodily, and apparently after he has subdued all of his enemies. Whether the cleanup has taken place yet, we don't know. We know there's a period of cleanup that has to happen. Why? Because Earth is a dump by this time. Earth is in many places nuclear, radioactive waste. And in fact, some of it will remain that throughout the millennium, the U.S. But we know all the streams have been polluted, the water sources have been polluted. The sun has undergone some dramatic transformation, something I think on the order of a mini nova, where suddenly it gets brighter and hotter for a short period and then it goes down. And in fact, it says it goes out. It says it's completely immersed in darkness. So obviously some physiological changes to the planet and physical changes to the sun are not out of the question. And again, then you've got all this, you've got this radioactive cloud of nuclear dust that's been spread all over the planet. You got death and decay. You got the islands that have been, and it seems to me that one of the reasons that the islands sink is that the oceans rise. Which won't mean much to us now, but living in Florida, that would be bad. I mean, a 10-foot rise in the oceans and I would have beachfront property. That'd be nice. Oh, well, then they'd probably throw me out and claim eminent domain or something, but, you know. So I think that there's going to be a significant rise in the water. Why? Because there's going to be a tremendous amount of heat that's going on during this time. And even one of the bowl judgments, they're scorched with intense heat. And what effect is this going to have? You talk about global warming. They're all worried about it. Guess how much the average temperature has risen in the last 100 years? 1.1 degree. Whoo! That's scary. Where's global warming this morning? I didn't feel it. You know, I noticed it was 18 in Oklahoma City. They're not feeling it. It was 1 in Bismarck. They're not feeling it. Where's global warming? We're not talking about global warming like that. We're talking about sudden global warming, where the earth is turned into an oven. I mean, it'd be like being in the worst. It's going to be far worse than summer in Florida. And summers haven't been quite as bad as they historically were here in the last few years. But I remember when you first moved down here, I mean, you could have a heat index of 110 to 115 every day. Not a breath of wind. Just like walking in an oven. And when you first moved down here, that's kind of what it seems like. But it's not been as bad, really. But we're going to talk about quick global warming. We're going to talk about microwaving this baby. We're going to microwave the... we'll see how long the ice caps last then. Throw them in a microwave. And essentially, that's what's kind of going to happen. So here you have this passage here in Matthew, now 25. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before Him. And He will separate them from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on His left. Now, these are living believers. Believers that have survived Daniel's 70th week. And yet, some of them are still negative and they're still going to be cast into the outer darkness. How much proof do you need? See, this is the whole deal. You can't prove anything to those that are negative. No matter how much you try, what words you use, how you hold your face, it doesn't make any difference. If they're negative and they don't want to hear it, they're not going to hear it. He's going to separate them, and then basically, and He deals with them based on their righteousness, and their righteousness is manifested in the way they treated the Jews during this time, particularly the last half. Because the Jews are suddenly going to become essentially a vagabond race. They're going to be commanded to flee their country, just as people 3.5 years earlier were warned, get out of the U.S. Well, the Jews are going to be told, get out of Israel, get out of Judea. And go to the mountains, which is ironic because Judea is largely mountainous. So why depart Judea if you're just going to the mountains? Judea is a pretty mountainous place. No, that's not. You've got to get out of Judea. So those mountains don't count. It's got to be somewhere else. And you'd be astonished. I've looked at some of the suggestions of this. Oh, well, during the time just before 70 AD, a bunch of the Jews fled to Pella, and they stayed there, and they were protected, and they didn't die in all those massacres of 70 AD. Hey, one problem. Pella's at sea level. Show me the mountains. That is not a fulfillment of this. But it's typical. They want to box this up because they've got a hidden agenda. Well, also chapter Revelation 20, 7 through 9. So they're going to begin repopulating the planet. The negative believers are taken off. They're taken away. And there's some question. There's one of those passages in there that's somewhat obscure. Like two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left. Is this talking about the rapture, or is this talking about the second advent where the negative one is removed and the positive one is left, the believer? Well, we'll have to cross that passage when we get to it. I don't have the answer for you today. Revelation 20, 7 through 9. First, they come to life and they reign with him for 1,000 years. But when the 1,000 years are released, or completed rather, Satan will be released. And he will come out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. And they came up on the broad plain of the earth. See, by the end of the millennium, what have you got? See, there's some question. I don't know that I have an answer, but it's something that's occurred to me. Is it possible for someone to be born right at not too long into the millennium? Or even to be enter the millennium? Say you entered the millennium and you were 10 years old. And you got 1,000 years. Well, first we know longevity is going to be greatly increased. Because, and here the second advent bounds this to Christ's return, starting here. And then, of course, at the end of it, it's over. Satan's released for a brief period and certain other things happen. But let's say you're 10 years old. Is it possible that you live through the entire millennium? I think it's a possibility. I don't know how long people are going to live. We do know that if you only live 100 years, they're going to think you're cursed. Well, this implies to me that many hundreds of years is probably the norm then. Not just 100. If 100 years is cursed, I mean, it'd be like dying, oh, they died when they were 6. Well, that's a tenth of the average lifespan. So, is it possible for people to live through this entire thing? Yes. But you got two things going on here. You got believers at the outset of this. Now, it's ironic. At the outset of Daniel's 70th week, you got a planet with there's nothing on it but unbelievers for just a brief period. And then at the outset of this, you got nothing on the planet but believers. So, what is this all? Why do we make this point? Because number one, what this says to me, loud and clear, is it doesn't matter what God does; volition is volition. You can live in perfect environment, or you can live in horrible environment, and you'll either make the adjustments or you won't. And why can one person, and then we get down into the genetics. People say, oh, well, they were genetically predisposed to not believe. Wrong. Absolutely wrong. Esau and Isaac prove that. They got the very same genetics, in fact. And born at the same time for all intents and purposes. One's positive, one's negative. So you can't lay it off to genetics. You can't lay it off to environment. Huh, this doesn't leave us a lot of places to run. Volition. So we see here, then these believers begin to repopulate the earth. Well, in the course of time, of course, people begin, unbelievers start filtering back in. And then by the end of the 1,000 years, it appears that unbelievers are the dominant force. They are in the majority by the end of this 1,000 years. And it says, they came up and surrounded the camp of the saints. That sounds like to me they're well outnumbered. On the order of what, 100,000 to 1 or something? I don't know. Million to one? And, fire came down out of heaven and killed them. Too bad. That's the end of that. It's called the Gog and Magog Rebellion, and it doesn't last long. But see, once Satan's loose, it doesn't take him long to get people going under their negative volition. And he knows how to trip their triggers. He knows where everybody lives. So, but here you have 1,000 years. Now, that's not to say some believers are going to, they'll remain believers and live through this. Maybe through the whole thing, maybe through half of it, I don't know. But in the end, unbelievers are once again, negative volition will dominate the scene. And here's what we've learned. What have we learned? If you give people freedom to choose, they can choose against God. Now, that's not a smart move, but they certainly can do it, and they do it. And most, in fact, do. They can choose against God. Well, here you have conditions. Jesus is ruling from planet Earth. As far as I understand it, there's no crime. There's increased longevity. Animals are not ferocious. I got to believe this is an entire period, the way it's described in the Old Testament passages, that this is a time of immense prosperity, of no crime, of great money, wealth, power. People are enjoying life and all of this. Jesus is ruling from Jerusalem. Visibly, you can see him. He's probably on TV every day. Well, Jesus did such and such today. So are we presuming all that our technology is going to go kaput once this is all over with? I don't think so. And can you imagine what mankind may be able to do under positive volition with technology? We won't be making any bombs. Oh, Boeing's going out of business. So much for Lockheed Martin. Oh, we won't need them anymore. Halliburton, we'll be glad they're gone. So, then they're going to survive this whole thing and then repopulate the planet. Three, those that have died will receive their resurrection bodies at that time. Fulfilling both Old Testament and New Testament prophecies. I don't want to read those, but Genesis, that's the prophecy, the promise to Abraham. That you're going to have endless deals and this land is going to be yours and you're going to inhabit it. See, Abraham never owned one bit of Canaan at all. Well, he owned one bit. And it was a gravesite. I don't think that's what God had envisioned in those promises. I'll give you all this land, including this special gravesite. No, I think there's more to it than that. And you can see Isaiah 26:19 and Luke. Let's look at Luke. Luke 11:28-29. So all these promises that have been made but are not fulfilled as of yet. Well, they're going to be fulfilled. Many of them in the millennium. Through that whole, just the event itself and the people in it. As the crowds were increasing, well, that doesn't look like the right one. That's definitely not it. Well, I don't know where it is. That's clearly not it, though. I think there was one where it says that people are going to come from the east and west and sit down with all these guys, Abraham and Isaac and all of that. Well, I don't know where it is, so that wasn't it. Maybe it's Matthew 11. I don't know. It's, you know, well, just bear with me a minute here. 11:32. Luke 11:32. Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, yeah, it's a... This is all going to happen during that time too. 31 and 32 is what that should be instead of 28 and 29. The queen of the south will rise up with the men of this generation at the judgment and condemn them. Why? Because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here. The men of Nineveh will stand up with this generation at the judgment and condemn it. Which tells you an important thing. Number one, the men of Nineveh and that generation are all present at the same judgment. Can't help that. See, the Ninevites weren't, they're not going to condemn them because the Ninevites became believers. Some of them did. And they're not going to condemn them because the Queen of Sheba necessarily became a believer. Maybe she did. But the point is that Jesus was greater than Solomon. He was greater than Jonah. He was greater than everybody else. And people paid attention to these lesser people. Why wouldn't they pay attention to him? He's saying this generation will be condemned because people will say, you know, I paid attention to something far less than this. I listened to Jonah. And Jonah was what we like to call the recalcitrant prophet. Jonah was the, here's the double backflip God, I'm leaving the ministry prophet. But they listened to Jonah. Jonah's a very fallible man. I mean, you can't read the book of Jonah and not get that. He's petty. He's vindictive. He's very schismatic. He likes to, you know, he likes to keep his little clique. The little clique was the Jews in his mind and all that. Oh, well, they listened to Jonah and he wasn't as good a communicator as Jesus. No, and he wasn't teaching the same level of doctrine either. So these guys are, what he's telling them is, you're all the more culpable, and then at the judgment, this is all going to be shown. F, while not explicitly addressed in the New Testament, it is evident from Isaiah that there will be believers that will die during the millennium, in spite of the extended lifespan. Isaiah 65:20, and I think that is the passage that sets forth for us, that the lifespan will be extended. In fact, many of the things that happened at the curse, the fall, and things that happened at the flood are going to be reversed. Isaiah 65:20, no longer will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days. Oh, that's going to make mothers happy. How many mothers have ever buried their babies and hated it and were torn up by it? That'll never happen. That's not going to happen during the millennium. There'll be none of that. Or an old man who does not live out his days. For the youth will die at the age of 100. And the one who does not reach the age of 100 will be thought accursed. But this indicates there will be people that die. You're not going to think it if it doesn't happen. It does happen. There will be people that die young and they'll wonder why. They must have been jammed by God. It's their only conclusion they'll be able to come to. Well, one further, there are clearly some believers living on the planet at the time of the Gog and Magog rebellion. That's the camp of the saints that gets surrounded there. And two, these believers will receive their resurrection bodies at the time God determines. But apparently before the dissolution of the original creation, I base that again on the fact that human bodies are made up of elements. And all the elements are going to melt with an intense heat. You remember that scene out of Raiders of the Lost Ark? You know, where they grab the thing, they open the ark, and they just melt right in front of you? Yeah, I think that's going to be hard on human life forms. Really. Very difficult on them. In fact, they can't survive it. So I know there's a new doctrine going around out there that believers are going to live in their immortal bodies forever and become immortal. No, I don't buy that at all. There's too many holes in that. Where does God put these believers when he speaks the elements out of existence? And again, there's no indication. I've never seen a human being that couldn't live without oxygen. Oh, well, God will supernaturally protect. Well, yeah, but this is all based on what? Arguments from silence. Everybody in the world that we know of, from Adam all the way through to the end of the church age, gets a resurrection body, and yet this little group doesn't. Well, number one, is that fair or consistent? No. Number one, it's not even fair or consistent. Number two, it doesn't seem to me to be physically possible to have a human life form that's not in a resurrection body, a human life form. The elements are going to, it's going to be so hot that elements are going to melt, and yet humans are going to survive it. No, absolutely not. So that doctrine has got to be tossed for a bunch of reasons. This idea that people are going to live in their earthly bodies in the eternal state. No, it doesn't fit. And number one, you got a real problem with population growth too on top of that. Oh, well, they won't be having sex. Really? Well, where did you get that? Another argument from silence. You know, I can build multiple arguments from silence. I can argue anything from silence. But see, you've got to have some kind of proof. We ask for some sort of textual proof. Why would one little bitty segment of humanity not get a resurrection body? They were unfortunate enough to be born in the millennium and survive it? And that's their punishment? You got to stay in a mortal body the rest of your life? That doesn't sound like a blessing to me. I mean, I know how I feel in this mortal body, and I'm ready to be out of it. So, again, there is no evidence of anyone entering the eternal state in a mortal body. Anybody that says that says it without evidence first. And I know people that have said it. I know this interpretation has been advanced, and it's incorrect. The dissolution of the universe at the time of the Great White Throne would make that impossible. And that's recorded. I didn't put the verse in there, but there's two of them. 2 Peter. 2 Peter describes the event, while Revelation just simply acknowledges the event. 2 Peter 3:7, by his word, the present heavens and earth are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. And verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. And people are going to survive that, right? No, I don't see any evidence that people could survive that. And then Revelation chapter 20, I believe it is. Yeah, 20. And this is the event Peter's talking about. I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. There's no physical universe any longer. The earth and heaven's gone. So you're living in a void, essentially, is all I could call it. Some sort of space void. And angels can tolerate this. Resurrected people can tolerate this. But could humans tolerate this? No, I don't think so. I don't think humans can tolerate life without oxygen. And then I saw the dead. And plus all of this here now is only, as we see here, only the spiritually dead are present at this event. They're the only ones here. I mean, not that others don't see it and observe it. They must. Because John says, I saw. That kind of implies seeing to me. I'm weird. He said he saw it, and I think he saw it. And all that. And I saw the dead, great and small. I believe we'll all see this. And we're going to know that all those pitiful people standing there are headed for the lake of fire. And yet we'll be able to take it without any emotional response, apparently, of any negative emotional response. We'll recognize that this is just the judgment of God, the righteousness of God being fulfilled as it should be. For literally, in a full sense of the word, the first time in human history that we'll see this. That we'll see evil getting what it deserves. Negative volition getting what it deserves. And we're going to say God is righteous. That's why we're commanded, like for instance, people feel bad about, oh, the U.S. is going to be destroyed. Well, don't feel bad about it. Matter of fact, if you back up and look in the, I think it's the end of chapter 19 there. No, chapter 18. Nope, 19, I'm sorry. No, 18, got it. 18 verse 20. 18 verse 20. What does God say when the U.S. is destroyed in 1 hour of one day? Can you imagine the nuclear holocaust? No, you really can't. Hiroshima and Nagasaki were nothing. And if you kids haven't seen pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, go online and look at them. Most of us adults have seen them. Go look at what a nuclear warhead will do. I saw a deal the other day on Anthony Bourdain. You know, he's that snarky chef that travels around. And I don't know of any better way to describe him than snarky. But he went to Chernobyl to visit. Why? I don't know. But they won't let you touch the ground there. They won't let you touch anything. They won't let you, that you can only be in the area very brief periods of time. And it's still a ghost town. And it's just sitting there and it's just a complete ghost town. But Hiroshima and Nagasaki weren't just ghost towns. There were people melted right in front of people's eyes. There were people that suffered. And you go look at those pictures, and if you can imagine something on the order of 1,000 times bigger than that being done. Number one, the warheads are far more advanced today. The sheer megaton volume of them, of what they can blow up. And you can go online and look. I was looking the other day doing some research on something. I mean, they had this deal of where they were showing these Soviet nuclear-tipped warheads. And, I mean, they were lined up as far as you could see. I mean, it wasn't a small little room. And they were, you know, very neatly all, you know, just as far as you could see. And, of course, there's some question as to who's in charge of all this now. Well, let's not worry about that. Well, here you see in Revelation 18, they're basically told, look, when this all happens, and this is going to be horrific. I mean, there's no question, this is going to be horrific. It's going to be God-awful. Rejoice over her. What? Rejoice over this entity. Because if you really knew the story of the U.S. and what all we've done, if you knew our full history, beginning with our glorious beginnings, which were, by all standards, for the purpose of Christianity. That was the real reason, was for the whole purpose, was for the actual practice of Christianity, to get away from the Church of England and the Pope, and the king. Of course, he'd become the pope. If you know all that about Henry VIII, he essentially said, I'm the pope. I'm the new pope. Oh, well, good. Well, now we got two of them that are dopes. Well, guess what? We started out with the right idea. The whole process was supposed to be a great experiment of the city on the hill, which could not be hid. And yet it's disintegrated and deteriorated into what we see today. A socialist country, largely so far in debt we can't even... What did God tell the Jews? If you please me, you will lend money and not borrow it. Uh-oh. Let's see, what's the national debt now? Oh, it just went up another million. Did you catch that? It's happening every few seconds. And these men in charge, every one of them ought to be executed for treason. Every congressman, every president for the last 30 years ought to be executed for treason. At least the last 30 years and maybe more. Because I guarantee you some of them, if you get into the history of it and you don't necessarily want to know, it's ugly. And these people, Woodrow Wilson was one of the worst. So all this revisionist history they teach you in school about how great all these men were, you don't know the backside of the story. They're only giving you one view of it. The formation of the Federal Reserve and all that was involved in that, the crash of the stock market in 29, and the brutal way that Americans were brutalized during all of this, and the things people suffered, and the Dust Bowl and all that. And we don't know about the Tuskegee Airmen or MK Ultra or any other factor, or invading countries that really aren't our business. And so when you get the full story of the U.S., and I've got several books, if you're interested in reading some little backgrounds, I got one called Some Call It Treason. Yeah, they do. Another one called Some Won't Dare Call It Conspiracy. And then the Rockefellers, if you want to know about these people. And the J.P. Morgans and Chase and all these other people. Oh, and Mr. House, he was a fine man. Dr. House made him look like a saint. And if you ever watched House, you know he was a jerkwad idiot. And this House that worked with Wilson behind the scenes. When you get into the history of this stuff, it's ugly. It is ugly. We financed the Bolsheviks. How many millions of Russians died during that deal? Who do you think armed Germany? Who do you think armed Iran? Who do you think armed Turkey? Who do you think armed Iraq? Us. The United States, not us. Our government. And guess what? It's ugly. It's real ugly. And when it goes down, people say, oh, it's going to be horrible, all that loss of life. Rejoice over her. Oh heaven, you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. And then he gives this little deal. Which I haven't found any problem with. A strong angel took up a stone, something like a great millstone, and threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and not be found any longer. And so some want to say, see, it's a city. But then it talks about the nations of the earth, and that you're a nation among them, and the nations of the earth have partaken with you. So it's a nation and a city. But so was Babylon, if you think about it. The kingdom of Babylon wasn't just the city of Babylon. It was the whole thing. Just as the U.S. isn't just one city, our capital, Washington. It's the whole thing, in that sense. And so, I think it was Jack that suggested that this angel comes and takes a Statue of Liberty and just does a hook shot into the Atlantic Ocean with it. Well, that would be a pretty dramatic thing, don't you think? An angel comes down, rips a Statue of Liberty off of Ellis Island. It's kind of worthless now anyway. It's in great disrepair and disarray. It kind of resembles our country. Ironic, isn't it? Oh, I wonder if we could have a picture of what the U.S. is like. Yeah, go look at the Statue of Liberty. Or as one of the rock stars called it, the Statue of Bigotry. Give me, you're hungry, you're tired, you're poor. Let's just club them to death. Because that's the way we do it. And when this all happens, they go down, well, okay. Rejoice over it. Be happy. Be happy that this is gone from the planet. This kind of evil, to that extent. Well, gee, the final resurrection in history will encompass the bodily resurrection of all unbelievers. This is the day/hour in which all unbelievers will be raised from the dead and provided with a resurrection body. Daniel 12:2 and John 5:29 we both looked at. 2, following the dissolution of the original creation, all unbelievers of human history, beginning with Cain. Who was the first unbeliever? Cain. He was of his father, the devil. That's recorded for us in 1 John chapter 4, I believe. 3 or 4, one of those passages deals with Cain. and that Cain was evil. He was of the evil one. So he emulated Satan. They will be summoned to the great white throne to face God in judgment. And we just looked at those passages. Three, the fact that they are judged before the great white symbolizing righteousness, of course, throne, emphasizes the magnitude of their crimes against the righteous judge of the universe. See, it isn't just that they won't believe. What do people engage in out there out of their unbelief? You got all manner of violence, sex crimes, all these things. You got the types of behaviors that are homosexuality and stuff that's now patronized and looked upon okay. But the believer that knows the Bible knows that this is all evil. These are abominations that these people are performing. The worship of celebrities. Oh, let's praise Dwayne Wade. He gave away some money. Good Lord, if I had as much money as Dwayne Wade did for playing basketball, I could give away a lot. So, let's praise him. No, let's not. Just another rich guy making himself feel good. Now, hopefully he's a believer. I don't know if he's a believer or not. If he's a believer, hopefully he's doing it right. But if he's not, most of them are not, then let's not carry on about it. Well, what looks good on the surface, see, that which was highly esteemed among men is an abomination with God. So there's a lot of abominations going on out there because there's a lot of stuff that's highly esteemed. Well, for by definition, everyone that appears at this judgment are unbelievers who will spend eternity being consciously tormented day and night, interminably, in their immortal bodies in the lake of fire. Revelation 20, 14 and 15 sums that up for us, that passage. They're judged out of two things. The books were opened. Those are the books of their deeds. This is where God manifests that via omniscience, he kept track of everything. That there was nothing that escaped his notice. And not only did their deeds not escape his notice, he knows the mental attitude behind the deed on top of it. Now, if the deed itself wasn't bad enough, say you're Hitler. What do you think Hitler was just loaded with the fruit of the Spirit? I mean, do you really feel that, the people, these despots of history? And by the way, when you talk about tribulation, such as never existed. And they want to make this 70 AD. Do you know how many people Mao killed in 27 years? Either killed or directly or starved to death? It pale. That makes 70 AD pale in comparison. That makes the Holocaust pale in comparison. And so you look at the world wars. Have tribulation like that ever existed before World War I? No, absolutely not. There have been wars, but not on that scale. And not with that amount of violence and technology. And not with that amount of deaths, frankly. So you go into this and you look at the tribulation that's occurred to the human race, and they still don't get it. Look at all the horrible things that have happened in history. What have we learned from history? Men were horrible. That's what I've learned from it. I mean, you look at history and it's not pretty. So they get the books, all their deeds are judged, all their mental attitudes, so there's nothing. God has all the facts. And then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And what he's going to do is he's going to go down, he's going to show every one of them, see, your name's not here. Your name is not here. And there won't be a blank where their name was, where he blotted it out. That's not going to happen. He wrote this book before the foundation of the world as a testimony to who was positive and who was negative. Why would he alter it? Number one, that makes God stupid. Why write a book, or fallible at best, either stupid or fallible, either way. Why write a book and say, well, I better edit it. God doesn't have to edit a book if he writes it. He doesn't even need a proofreader. He's not like Ron. Well, there you go. So they're judged. The book of life is open. Guess what? Your name's not here. And the dead were judged from the things written in the books according to their deeds. So however good or bad they were. Now they're all unbelievers. They're all going to the lake of fire. All of them are going to the same place. There will be degrees of punishment and degrees of torment even in this. Now, how good does this guy feel, the best guy in the lake of fire? He's alone, he has no friends, he resides in darkness, he's in conscious torment and pain at all times. He's got regrets, he knows he's only there because of his own fault. He knows nobody else is to blame. Oh, this has got to leave you feeling pretty crappy for eternity. Now, that's the best guy. And what can God do for down here at the bottom? Guess who's at the bottom of the lake of fire? Why, Satan. And his place is going to be even worse. They're going to come by and taunt him. At least, you know, maybe that guy up here, the best guy in the lake of fire, at least nobody bothers him. Well, that's a real blessing, I guess. Blessing? Lake of fire? No, these are non sequiturs. They don't go together. But here, down here, his is going to be even worse. He will be the most debased creature for all eternity. The one who is literally number two up here, and his fall is complete now. And he's absolutely at the bottom of the pecking order in the lake of fire. See this idea of Satan reigning in hell and various stuff? No, he doesn't reign in hell. He doesn't reign at all. So, pardon me. The fact that they're there, again, then they're tormented day and night, Revelation 20, 14 and 15. There in death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. Now what happens in the lake of fire? Verse 10 of the same chapter, the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and false prophet are also. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. And so, and where are the beast and false prophet? Well, they've been there for 1,000 years, so they're still consciously alive. I mean, that was one of the things that really comes across in Revelation when you study it. If you back up to chapter 19, verse 20, the beast was seized and with him the false prophet, who performed the signs in his presence by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast. And those that worship him. And these two were thrown alive into the lake of fire which burns with brimstone. So if you can picture something on the order of burning sulfur, that's what this is set forth at. And you know what sulfur smells like, right? So even the olfactory deal in hell, I'm presuming they're going to smell the stench of it too, forever. You know, it's like living in a really horrible place next to a pig farm and you can't get away from it. If you've ever been around a pig farm in summer, if you haven't, you haven't lived. Because this will send your nose to new heights. You will experience things you have never experienced before at a pig farm. One of them will be intense nausea. It is not pretty. First, it's not pretty. And secondly, it smells worse. And I remember I had a great aunt and a great uncle, and they raised pigs, and chickens and this stuff, and we'd go out and slaughter them, did the usual farm stuff when we were kids. And I hated being around that pig farm during the summer. It was awful. Well, this is where they're going to spend eternity. This is how they're going to spend it. Doesn't sound good. Well, five, the other book that is opened is the Book of Life, in which all the names of all believers had been recorded in eternity past. People misunderstand things. For instance, there's a passage, if you back up to Revelation 3, in verse 5, if you read it, he who overcomes will thus be clothed in white garments, and I will not erase his name from the book of life. So does it sound like, from that, on the surface, does it sound like he's going to be erasing some names from the book of life? It sounds like it, but this is actually a figure of speech. It's called latates, and it's intentionally understating something. He says this because, number one, it's impossible for him to do. God can't do this. See, when Moses challenged God, blot my name out of the book, God didn't say, I will. And thank God he didn't listen to Moses. Blot my name out of your book of life. I don't think you want that. But Moses knows he can't. See, Moses has the doctrine. He knows God can't do that. And so what he's saying is he's trying to take a position to encourage God not to destroy Israel. That if you're going to destroy Israel, just destroy me too. Well, that's an extreme position. That's hyperbole. Moses doesn't really want that. He's not saying, like when Jesus, he says, I wish you were cold or hot. I think he wishes they were hot, if you really ask him what he would like. He would like that they were hot. But when he says, I wish you were cold or hot, he's not really saying, I wish you were cold. It's understated or overstated, depending upon the case. Well, here it's understated. I can't erase your name from the book of life. Now, how do I know that? Revelation 13. Revelation 13:8. All who dwell on the earth will worship him. Everyone whose name has not been written. See, their names weren't erased or blotted out. They were never written. So people have mashed this up, and I've watched even doctrinal pastors just mangle this. To where, I mean, it was just frustrating to listen to them teach it. And it wasn't Jack, so you can let, you know, so just, it wasn't him. Just in case anybody's wondering. Wasn't Jack. But other pastors I've heard, and they have just mangled this. And just, they've got God writing a book that's not perfect. Really? Oh, I wonder if Jesus was perfect when he was born or was just had a sin nature? Oh. Everything God does is perfect. It can't be anything less. If it's less than perfect, then God isn't perfect. That's just pretty standard logic there. So, it says they were never written. Not that they were blotted out, never written. Now, why would God write a name down and then go along later and say, oops, erase, erase, erase? He wouldn't. So, they were never written from the foundation of the world. This is negative volition, never written down. And then also, Revelation 17:8. The beast which you saw was and is not, and is about to come out of the abyss and go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth, whose name has not been written, not blotted out, not written. There's a huge difference. And I'm pretty sure those are perfects. I'd have to go back and look. But I'm sure has not been written is probably a perfect. Meaning not written in the past with the existing results that it was never written. Whose name was not written from the foundation of the world. And by the way, why write a record in the beginning of time to use at the end of time if the record isn't valid? That seems dumb. Why would I use that if it's not even valid, if it's not even provable? The fact is, this is provable. Here's my document I wrote from the foundation of the world. I'll bet you money that document was shown to all the angels. I'll bet you money they've seen the book of life. So when God pulls out the book of life, they aren't going, who, what's this? They're going, oh yeah, that's the record you showed us at the beginning of who all, oh. See, the angels are still learning in all this too. Sometimes it's easy to attribute more to them than they have. Well, 6, since their names are not found in the book of life, they are judged from the books, which are the records of their deeds. And this establishes each person's level of culpability and determines each one's level of eternal punishment. Just as there are rewards in heaven, differences in rewards, there's going to be differences in punishment in hell. I would still rather be in heaven. And then 7, the judge is Jesus Christ with emphasis on his true humanity. He has appointed one man. He's going to judge the earth. And that one man, emphasis. So why is Jesus, if he's fully human, then he understands everything about the human experience. Nobody can look at Jesus as the judge and say, you don't understand. You don't know what I went through. Oh, really? Jesus said, let's talk about going through some things. Yeah. Well, no, none of us went through what he went through. You can see John 5:22 and 27, Acts 10:42. Actually, Acts 10:42, I think, is the last one we'll look at today. We're out of time, but I believe this is exactly what Simon says here. And he ordered us to preach to the people and to solemnly testify that this is the one who has been appointed by God as judge of the living and the dead, and of him all the prophets bear witness, that through his name everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins. And so, and then Acts 17:31, I believe that's there in Athens, where he basically tells them it's a man. That we think, well, God's going to judge everything. It's the God-man who's going to judge everything. Again, with emphasis on the humanity. Acts 17:31, and he has fixed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness through a man whom he has appointed, having furnished proof to all men by raising him from the dead. Well, that's one of the reasons Jesus has to be resurrected. He has to be alive to judge everybody. So that's an important point. He's got to be there to do that. That's part of his deal. Okay, well, our time's gone. We will pick up here. Oh, remember, we do not have class Tuesday, which is New Year's Day. We will pick up here on Wednesday this week. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the joy of studying these things. May God the Holy Spirit enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen.